VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And friends, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. I have a question for you. How many times have you looked at the news headlines and said, oh no, not again? Another carjacking, an attempted stabbing on a flight, an uprising at an area store or shopping mall, a shooting on a campus, a burglar entering a home, a holdup while out on a walk or waiting for a bus or train. What about online recruitment to an unsuspecting child about being lured into sex trafficking? And the list goes on. Ladies and gentlemen, our nation is not getting any safer. Just look at what's happening all over the country. And it doesn't matter where you go. It could be to school. It could be to church. It could be to an area business or just out in your community. I do want to remind us that Scripture tells us we don't know what a day may bring forth, but we do maintain vigilance regarding our surroundings. We're required to do that. Do you have a built-in awareness as you go about your day? Is there anything one can do to deter such tragic things from taking place? Now, certainly our hope and trust is in God. I understand that. But we also realize that God has given us a brain, that we are not to live in a haphazard way. We're going to be developing this issue more today. It's our privilege to have with us Brian Searcy, a retired U.S. Air Force colonel. He's founder and CEO of the Paratus Group. He's a situational and awareness expert and safety and leadership consultant, author of Prepare for the Real World, The World is Not a Safe Place. Brian, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you also for your service to our nation.
Well, you bet, and thank you for having me on. I wish we didn't have to talk about this.
Yes, and certainly since your book came out, things are not getting any better, are they?
No, when the book was published a year ago, I never envisioned that it would be this much worse just 1 year later. And it's just an indicator about how we need to really start focusing on the development of situation awareness to the everyday parents that are out there so they can start to take responsibility for the safety of their families. And then when we work together, we can take responsibility for the safety of our community. That's how we're going to make a difference.
Colonel Searcy, we're going to get into some specifics in a short while here, but let's begin by just defining this term, situational awareness. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so as you alluded to, situation awareness is a God-given gift that we all have. It's that hair on the back of the neck. It's that gut feeling when something isn't right in your environment that you get that feeling. And 30 or 40 years ago when I was growing up, when you were probably growing up, our parents taught us that skill, and we had opportunities when we were out in our community playing with friends, doing different things to be able to learn and develop situational awareness. The sad truth today, however, is that less than 1 in 7 people in our communities actually have situational awareness, and it's not just getting that hair on the back of the neck or that gut feeling. It's actually having a process like the process we have at the Prodigy Group that allows you then to take when you get that hair on the back of the neck or that gut feeling or you perceive something that isn't right in a friend of yours, and it's to take action on it. It's to actually have the empathy to do something about it, to prevent bad things from happening, because that's our focus. Most traditional type training today is going to try and teach somebody what to do in a certain situation, and I'll go into why that fails from the very beginning. But our program is all about empowering the habits, the behaviors, and a mindset through the practicing of a process that allows you to prevent bad things from happening, to prevent yourself from being a victim and your loved ones from being victims.
So if you had to provide a grade on people in general being aware of their surroundings, what kind of grade would it be?
An F. Like I said, the statistics of less than one in seven people actually have practicing situational awareness today. We've all got it, but people don't practice it.
Yeah.
And that's actually from the Harvard Business Review. That's not something that I came up with at the Prodigy Group. But I will tell you that in my 3 or 4 years since I've been doing this now, I bet the number's worse than that. I believe it's even less than that, the number of people that have situational awareness.
You have indicated that it typically takes 2 to 5 seconds for someone to realize that a dangerous situation is unfolding and begin to react to it. That's not a very long period of time.
No, it's not. But when you have a process and you practice situational awareness, and like I said, when you've established those habits and those behaviors, when you walk into a coffee shop or a grocery store, you walk into a restaurant and you practice the process that we teach, You identify what normal is. You identify those things that are here that aren't threatening. Then if something enters that environment that sets that hair on the back of the neck off, or that gut feeling, that God-given gift that we all have, well, that is very, very quick, but then it takes a little bit of time to figure out what it is, and then even more important, you've got to be able to then figure out what to do about it to prevent it from happening, or prepare yourself and or your family to be able to respond. And here's the key. The only way that you can prepare yourself to respond or prevent something from happening is to have thought through different actions that you personally are capable of taking. And hardly anybody practices that today.
Yeah, and we have to consider that the bad guy has perhaps planned to do what he's going to do. And if one has only but a few seconds to respond, the victim otherwise is at a great disadvantage if without that preparation.
Not only are they at a great disadvantage, but one of the things that we know to be true is that when you act prepared, when you have that ability to pay attention to what's going on around you, whether you're walking down the street, whether you're getting into your car late at night after leaving work, it's the people that are on the phone, it's the people that get in their phone and lock the door, or get in their car and lock the door, and then they sit there on their phone for 10 minutes. Those are the easy victims for predators. What we need to change is the fact that people act and behave prepared, because the predators don't want that kind of person as a victim. They're not looking for somebody that is prepared, that has already thought about what they would do in a specific situation that will keep themselves from being in a position where they could potentially be a victim. They're looking for those easy targets. And unfortunately today, and why we're seeing such a rise in all of those threats that you talked about, is because people don't have situational awareness. They don't look prepared. So to most predators out there, they are easy victims.
How has your military training impacted how you think on this issue?
Well, I am blessed that I do have that military background. Being an aviator, there's 15 things that we talk about that aviators do that really tie into leadership, that, and it's actually part of a leadership talk that I give, that if people just follow these 15 things, it would dramatically not only improve their leadership and their parenting ability, but it would contribute to their ability to have situational awareness. And then there's also the 10 critical personal skills that we have in our program that you also develop when you're in the military, especially when you're an aviator. And that's being self-aware, know what's going on around you. It's being perceptive, understanding perspectives, knowing how to make decisions, knowing how to communicate, knowing that you have to continually be learning from your environment and from things that happen, that you need to have empathy and you need to have humility. All of those things, when they're tied together and you practice those, that's what allows you to really practice and use situational awareness to prevent bad things from happening.
And friends, we're going to try and break those down a little bit more later in the interview. But Colonel Searcy, you know what's happened on various campuses, whether it's an active shooter, an active stabber, some bad guy that's out there. The training that's been given to many, or the protocol, is run, hide, fight. Is that an effective formula?
Well, so run, hide, fight is a general concept is good information. And when it's included in a holistic training approach where situational awareness is the foundational tool, it's the foundational habits and behaviors that are there, then you can use run, hide, and fight. The problem is that when people don't have situational awareness, they don't practice a process like we have at the Paratus Group. That means that they have no idea whether they should run, hide, or fight. They can't analyze the situation. They haven't thought about different actions that they could potentially take in a situation. And probably most important, and where traditional training really fails us today, is that they tell people what they should do in a given situation. And 90 to 95% of the time, the people that they're telling to do that don't have the capability. They're not trained to do that. So when you tell somebody to do something that they don't know how to do, you set them up for failure. You paralyze them. You make the situation even worse. So that's why in our program, it's all about the individual figuring out what they're capable of doing in a whole host of different situations. And then if they decide that I want to be able to do more, I want to carry mace, I want to carry a firearm, I want to learn self-defense tactics, then they can go out and learn that and add that to their you know, what we call your lizard brain, your library of actions that you're able to use after you've been able to identify and assess the situation and then make a decision on what to do.
You know, I talked about a litany of things happening in society today, and it's you know, these are sadly daily occurrences all over this nation. Do you believe we need to live in fear?
Absolutely not. And as a matter of fact, I've had a few people that have come up to me or talked to me prior to actually hearing my presentation and learning about our program saying that's what I'm doing. I'm talking about and trying, I'm trying to sell fear when what I'm really trying to do is prepare people to not be afraid. And that is what we truly find from pretty much everyone that has taken our program is when you are prepared, when you've thought about what you're going to do, when you learn what normal is, and you are then empowered to make decisions and act, you're not going around fearful. You are actually prepared. And one of the things we talk about is worry is not the same as preparation. And that's what people do. So in order to be prepared, you have to have situational awareness. You need to learn how to practice that. You need to be aware of the threats. We have so many parents and people in our communities today that have blinders on that don't think that these things are in their backyard when they are. You need to learn and develop these 10 critical skills because you can't have situational awareness if you don't learn and practice these skills. And then it's got to turn it into habits and behaviors. Traditional training fails every single time. If somebody just goes to a school and says, you got to run, hide, fight, and this is what situational awareness is, and then they give that presentation for an hour and then nothing else is done, no habits or behaviors are established, that traditional training will be forgotten within a week. And really does very, very little to prepare somebody to be able to go out and live their life and not be fearful.
We have with us today retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Brian Searcy, and he is founder and CEO of the Paratus Group. And we're going to talk about, you mentioned a couple of times these 10 critical skills as being an imperative part of training as it pertains to situational awareness. And if we could just recap these, we can't go in depth like your program would, but let's talk about them. The first one you mentioned is self-awareness. Comment on that issue.
Yeah, so self-awareness, there's actually three parts to that. And most people can think of that first part. It's knowing what's going on around you. But then the second part of being self-aware is knowing what you're capable of doing, not setting yourself up to do something that you're not capable of doing. And then finally, that your words and your actions have impact. We make a conscious decision if we escalate a situation or if we learn how to de-escalate a situation, whether that's with your spouse, with your kids, with somebody at work. We teach how to do tactical breathing. Tactical breathing empowers you to give that time to take emotion out of decisions. You know, there's a whole host of things that go along with that, but there's actually, like I said, three parts to being self-aware.
Okay, self-aware. The second point you have is perceptive.
And most people today are not paying attention to what's going on around them. They're either focused on what, you know, they're going to get when they go to the grocery store, or they're on their phone. They're thinking about an argument they had with somebody. And that's because they don't practice the process and they don't make situation awareness important. So we need to pay attention and see what is going on around us. That is how we recognize what normal is. That's how we set our own personal situational awareness up so that when we get that hair on the back of the neck or that gut feeling, we learn to trust it and act on it every single time.
You talk about that phone, but how many times do we see individuals walking haphazardly, you know, across a busy intersection into a store, just totally oblivious to anything going on around them with that, you know, the phone up to them?
Well, and that's absolutely true. And that's why we have a process that we teach at the Paratus Group that turns your behavior into habits and behavior. So you walk into a grocery store, and the first thing you do is you stop, look, and listen, and then you identify, is there anything here that I'm concerned about? If not, then I assess, you know, can I sit so my back's not to the door? Where are the exits? You know, a whole host of things that go into that. And then the third thing we, as part of that process, is you then predict, what would I do today if this happened?
Let's take a break right here. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, evolutionists say that because our blood is similar to seawater, this proves the evolution of life in the ocean. Is this true?
Chris, it is true that evolution says that life evolved in the sea, but human blood is very different from seawater. Now, many of the same elements are in both, but the concentrations and compounds are very, very different. God used the building blocks he had created on day one to form all things. Human blood has unbearably complex molecules locked into complex combinations that are very different from anything ever found in seawater. In fact, seawater would break down the compounds that we have in our blood. Chris, we can be confident that man did not come from the sea. Man was created by the Creator, who also created the sea. We read all about it when we go back to Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. Morris. For more information, You can find us on the web at www.icr.org.
Retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Brian Searcy with us here today on Crosstalk and talking about situational awareness. Friends, we can't be like the ostrich, you know, putting our head down into the ground and be oblivious to all that's going on around us, because there is much going on. And if we want to give protection not only for ourselves, but for our families, for our loved ones, the people that we're, around, surrounding ourselves with as well, these principles are very, very important. We're talking right now about 10 critical skills imperative. It's part of the training that they do and make you, more situationally aware. We talked about self-awareness. We talked about perceptive. And the next one is perspective. Tell us the difference between perceptive and perspective, if you would, Brian.
Yeah, so in perceptive, like I said, is that seeing what's going on around you and paying attention to those types of things. Perspective is understanding that people think differently. They have different experiences, and it's okay, and it should be okay in our country, that this great republic of ours, to remember that you and I can be having the conversation. We have a different perspective on something. And what I should really want to do is learn from your perspective. I still may not agree with it, mm-hmm. Because my background, training, my environment, a whole host of other things, but I should respect your perspective and I should try to learn from it. And that is also tied into one of the other critical skills that will be coming up here in a little bit. But I am consistently paying attention to other people's perspective and learning from them in conversations that we have.
Number four is listening.
Yeah, today, unfortunately, most people, they listen to respond. You'll be having a conversation with somebody and you're looking them in the eye and you can see that they've just tuned you out because they've already decided what they're going to say and they're just waiting for you to stop talking.
Mm-hmm.
Active listening is what we all need to do. We need to be paying attention and understanding and learning what that perspective is that other person has.
Right.
And then ask them some questions to gain insight into what they're thinking. And, oh, by the way, you can't de-escalate a situation. You can't practice situational awareness if you're not an active listener, if you're not learning from what other people are saying, if you're not paying attention to what they're saying regarding a situation or how to communicate. That's why you'll hear me say all of these skills are tied together. And one of the things we talk about is if there's a few of these that you aren't good at, those are the ones that you need to practice.
So we have self-awareness, perceptive, perspective, listening, and number five, critically think.
Yes, and that's a lost art today, but a big reason it's a lost art is because people aren't perceptive. They don't understand different perspectives. And they don't want to learn. They're not listening actively, so they then don't take all that information in. They just look at their own perspective, what somebody else has told them. They're not asking questions, so they don't actually do that critical thinking. Well, when you're trying to prevent a bad thing from happening or respond to a bad thing, if you can't assess the situation, make decisions about what you should do to protect yourself or your family, that's all critical thinking. If you can't do that, then you're not going to be able to figure out what to do, like I said, to be able to keep something bad from mm-hmm. happening or be able to respond to it if it's already happening.
And these principles we're talking about, these are all within those few seconds that we were talking about, correct?
Absolutely. Well, yes and no. When you practice the process that we teach and you do that 25 to 35 seconds every time you do identify, assess, and predict, you're using these skills in that 25 to 35 mm-hmm. seconds to analyze what's going on in the environment. If everything's normal, thinking about what you would do, you're putting information into what we call your lizard brain. That's the part of your brain that you go to under stress. So when something bad happens, you can't be creative and think about what you're going to do. You're going to be like what Maverick says in Top Gun, where he says, don't think, just do. Well, the just do are things that he's thought of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And then in that stressful situation, he goes to that lizard part of his brain and figures out, okay, this is what I need to do in this situation.
Okay, so that's critically think. The next one is learning agility.
And that's basically tied to the fact that you're always learning. And so I can't tell you how many times I have gone into the same coffee shop, probably 500 times, and I've practiced my process 500 times. But every time I've walked in, the situation has been different. People have been in different places. I may not have been able to sit with my back to the door. So I'm constantly learning about how I can position myself not to be a victim, how I can position my family not to be a victim. But, and it's all about that learning. And like I said, that's tied to active listening. That's tied to being perceptive. That's tied to understand that other people have different perspectives that I can learn from. But one of the 15 things I talked about in my leadership talk about what aviators can teach us, there's a number 8, I believe it is, says you don't only earn your wings once, which means that you went through training, you went through 9 months of training, now you've got your wings. Well, you're not done learning. You're not done training. Mm-hmm. Every time you step into the airplane, actually every time you do mission planning to step into that airplane, you're learning and adapting and figuring out how to act on this specific flight, mm-hmm. in this specific situation.
So it's really working like building blocks.
It is, but it's more like maybe, you know, but a puzzle, because you mm-hmm. are having to move things around based on what you learn. So you are building blocks, you're building your ability to do things, but then you have to be able to move things
right.
around based on what the situation presents.
And the next point here is decisiveness.
Yeah, I've seen families, and my wife and I have done this certain, you know, at times where one will ask the other, what do you want for dinner? And the other says, I don't know, what do you want for dinner? And then I would say, I don't know, what do you want for dinner? And so we have a personal, you know, 3-strike rule. If you're the person, it's the 3rd strike, well, you have to make the decision.
A good rule.
And but that's the problem today is that because people haven't thought about what to do, they're basically unable to make a decision, which means they're unable to change an outcome to prevent something bad from happening or to be able to respond to something bad happening. So that's why, again, this is all tied together to be able to analyze, assess, be perceptive, be perspective, understand perspectives, to be able to think critically, to consistently learn. But then now, because I've thought about what I would do, I'm actually able to make a decision. And that's where a lot of people fail. I have seen numerous times where people are perceptive. They may notice that somebody's behavior has changed or that something doesn't look right, but because they haven't thought about what to do, because they haven't built that library, that lizard brain, that library of actions, they don't do anything. And that's where 99% of the people fail when it comes to situational awareness.
Situational awareness is our topic today. And friends, we're talking with retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Brian Searcy, and right now going through these 10 critical skills as being really an imperative part of training as it pertains to situational awareness. Number 8 on the list is communication. That's an interesting one.
When you think about it, especially in stressful situations, if people haven't thought about how to communicate, what to say, they're unable. And I have done dozens of active shooter scenario training, and we'll have a teacher up there, and we'll have stressful things going on, and we'll give them their phone. Their phone is locked, and the first thing they can't do, they can't unlock their phone because their heart rate is so high, they've lost their fine motor skills, so they're unable to lock their phone. But because they haven't thought about what to do in a situation, they have absolutely have no idea what to say when they're talking to, if they're able to dial 911 when they're talking to a 911 dispatcher. They can't describe the situation. They can't tell them what's going on. Oftentimes they can't get words out. And it could be as simple as, you know, a 16-year-old going over to his friend's house. We all think because we have a phone today and GPS is such a fantastic thing in that phone when you dial the 911 operator that they're going to know exactly where you are. Well, that doesn't always happen. I have an example of a 16-year-old at a friend's house. Friend had an accident. It was a pretty bad accident, dialed 911, and the dispatcher couldn't get the address, and they said, where are you? And they said, I'm at Bobby's house.
Hmm.
So it's not just the ability to communicate in the situation. It's thinking through how would I communicate? What would I say? Do I know the address that I'm at? Am I paying attention to mile markers when I'm driving down the road so I can tell emergency responders where I am? Can I tell them what is going on because I'm being perceptive, because I'm listening to what other people are saying? I'm able to critically think. I'm able to be decisive, and then I'm actually able to communicate. So, again, all of these things are tied together for you to be able to do the things that are required to prevent bad things from happening or respond if you have to.
And, you know, I've talked to a 911 dispatcher who has been the receiving of calls and has indicated that the people calling in have no idea where they are or, as you mentioned, paying attention to those mile markers or paying attention to, you know, street signs, et cetera. It's a critical component even of that self-awareness and being perceptive at the beginning. Let's go to point number 9, and that is empathy.
And with empathy, what we talk about is having the necessary skills being prepared to be able to take responsibility for your own safety, but then more importantly, you can take responsibility for the safety of others and wanting to take responsibility for the safety of others. My family knows, and anybody that goes through a training at the Paratus Group knows, that when I'm walking through a parking lot, when I'm in a grocery store or coffee shop, I'm not just paying attention to my own personal safety or the safety of my family. I'm looking out for other people. You know, are they walking in front of a car? If there's a mom and her kid with a stroller walking to the car with groceries and a shopping cart, is somebody following them? So it's the desire to not only take care of yourself and think about yourself or your family to that first level, but to want to take care of others. And at the Paratus Group, that's what we talk about. That's how we take back the safety of our communities. When dozens and dozens of families have and practice this skill, and we care about the safety of others, and we look out for others, and we've thought about what we would do to protect our communities, that's how we're going to make a difference. The sad truth today with our law enforcement across our country is they are very limited in their ability to prevent things from happening. They are responders. That's why in their name, they are responders. Members of our communities, we need to learn how to be preventers, to prevent those bad things from happening, because our emergency responders are so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. They always want to be there, but they can only do to the level of their expertise and the level of their capability based on what's going on in our communities.
The last point would seem not to fit in, but so we're going to ask you about this 10-point humility. How does humility fit in with all of these other aspects?
Well, you might remember during the pandemic when everybody was wearing masks, or somebody then walked into a grocery store and didn't have a mask, how many times people would say things and how things would get into arguments. That, and also, you know, somebody that's well-trained in martial arts that might be carrying a weapon, the last thing that we want to do is actually have to use that weapon. The only time I would ever use any of my training is if somebody's life, my own, my family, or somebody else's life is in danger. I can't tell you how many times I have actually walked away from somebody that is trying to start an argument with me, yell at me, and it's because I have humility. I don't have to prove myself to that person. I don't have to win the fight.
Mm-hmm.
I can walk away, and that goes back to, you know, that third part of being self-aware, knowing that your words and your actions have impact. So I choose to not escalate situations. Or if I need to in a situation because something may be getting ready to happen, I use that humility. I use these 10 critical skills. I actively listen. I'm perceptive. I understand empathy with the other person. And I have a tone that is not escalating things. So being able to practice empathy when we interact with other people, allowing them to have their own perspective without us getting angry, because we don't have to prove that we're right. A lost art today. And that's why humility is so important as one of these 10 critical skills.
Yeah, indeed. And that whole aspect of de-escalation, if one's raising their voice against us and we're trying to go, you know, a greater volume against them, we're only going to make the situation far worse.
Absolutely. That's why when we teach de-escalation, what you really want to do is control your own emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You want to actively listen, and then you want to get quiet. If I'm quiet, they have to be quiet.
Friends, we're going to take a quick break, and I've got just a couple more questions we'll be running by our guest here today. And then also we'll be opening phone lines to give you opportunity to weigh in on the discussion today with your questions. Colonel Brian Searcy is with us today. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk, coming your way from the VCY America Network.
Cemeteries and mausoleums are evidence of the sad reality of death, and that each of us has a divine appointment with death. According to surveys, Americans overwhelmingly believe that heaven exists and believe that most are going there. A small number believes that hell exists, with only 0.5% believing they will go there when they die. What if those who do not believe in hell die one day and find they made a tragic and eternal mistake? In the book, Hell is for Real, author Gary Fraser discusses the separation, the suffering, and the sorrow of hell, along with future events that will unfold. There is much information given by movies, television, psychics, and even by many religious circles. Gary presents scriptural truth on this important topic. VCY is making available the book, Hell is for Real, as our way of saying thank you for your support of $15 or more. Two copies for a donation of $25. Just ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829.
Listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today, we have retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Brian Searcy. We're talking about situational awareness, and we just went through these 10 critical skills that can actually aid you in that whole aspect of situational awareness. And matter of fact, as it relates to these 10 principles, there is a direct spiritual application to this as well. You have indicated so on your website that these 10 skills can actually aid and sharing your faith in Jesus Christ as well. Bridge that connection for us, if you would.
Yeah, well, and that is also tied to situational awareness. I was blessed for a number of years to teach Navigator 2-7, which is designed to empower people to learn their testimony and then to be able to share their testimony with other people.
Mm-hmm.
I would see all too often, though, that people just try to bulldoze their testimony on somebody and not pay attention and use these 10 critical skills and their situational awareness to determine what part of their testimony should they use when they talk to this individual, or are they even the right person? I can't tell you, and this goes back to humility as well, I can't tell you how many times I would be having a conversation with somebody who, and we would be at the very high level talking about, you know, my faith or their faith or those types of things, and I would realize from our conversation, because I'm actively listening, I'm listening to what their perspective is, I'm doing critical thinking, and then I'm being decisive, and I realize, you know, I'm not the right person to talk to them. My wife is, or my mother-in-law is, because their testimony is what would truly ring true to these people.
Mm.
And then the other thing that goes along with that is to think that if I share my testimony, that my sharing that testimony is the one that is the reason why that person then would accept Jesus Christ into their life, where we should know that we are just one of the pebbles. We may be that pebble that time that actually resonates with that person, but we may be the first pebble, and it could be 30 pebbles later where somebody talks to them that's when it really resonates, and that's when Jesus is on their heart and they actually start to believe in Jesus Christ and accept him to be their savior. So
some plant, some water, it's God that gives the increase, and praise
Absolutely.
God for that. But what a great correlation with these principles, folks, even in sharing your faith in Christ. Brian, as we put all of this together, you indicate that individuals need to practice your process. Just comment on that aspect as well, if you would.
Yeah, I briefly introduced it, and I actually took it from an Air Force process called the OODA loop, observe, orient, decide, and act, and it's something I practiced when my squadron commanded the air operations for the Iraq and Afghanistan air war. Basically, what we teach is a five-step process: identify, assess, predict, decide, and act. So you walk into that coffee shop. You identify, is there anything here that concerns me, anything that sets the hair on the back of my neck or that gut feeling? No, then you move to assess. Can I sit so my back's not to the door? Where are the exits? Is there cover and concealment? Do the bathroom doors lock? You go through those types of things. And then the third part is you predict. Okay, if I'm here today where I'm sitting and somebody were to come in and they look like they are going to do something that could be harmful, or somebody gets into an argument with a waitress or the manager, what would I do in that situation? How would I try to de-escalate it, or what would I do to potentially prevent something from happening? And depends on whether I'm with my family or I'm not with my family. And takes about 25 or 30 seconds, but now I've thought through all of this. Now I'm prepared. I'm not fearful. Then if something happens that sets off that hair on the back of the neck or that gut feeling, something enters my environment that it isn't normal, and because I've already thought through what I would do, I go to the decide phase. Do I remove my family? Do I hide my family? Do I take action? And that would be the last part. That's act, where I would take action to stop something bad from happening, or I actually have my family run into the bathroom and lock the doors or run out the back exit, you know, if I'm not able to prevent it from happening. But it's the practicing of this process and establishing of the habits and the behaviors of the mindset that empowers people to prevent things from happening, But then if they need to make those critical decisions after critical thinking and then actually taking action.
I've got more questions here, but I do want you to get out your website, how our listeners can learn more information on these things and what you provide.
Yeah, so the website is www.paratus, that's paratus.group. There's a contact page. And they can also go to a page where we have our 10 critical skills. They can download a two-page PDF that goes into a little bit of basically what I've already talked about those 10 critical skills, mm-hmm. and they can refresh their memory on that.
Great. Okay. And that's a paratus.group, paratus.group. And you'll find more information there. Friends, our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 1-800-733-9829. Let me ask you this. Is there any place we can go that we can let down our guard? Is there a safe space, a church where we don't have to think about this? Or we see this sign outside a store that says gun-free zone? Do we ever let down our guard?
Well, when you practice the process that we teach and you prepare yourself because you've thought through with those three steps, then you are in that prepared mode, and that what then allows you to go through and do the things that you want to do because you've identified what normal is, because you have fine-tuned your God-given gift of situation awareness so that if somebody walks in or something happens that sets that hair on the back of the neck or that gut feeling, then that's when you take it to the next step. Now, is there any place that we can go where we are absolutely safe today? Unfortunately, the answer to that is no. These bad things can happen anywhere, mm-hmm. and I had a situation over the weekend where my wife was actually the person that identified somebody that was acting that wasn't normal, that wasn't, you know, in the normal that we would behave. She came in over and mentioned it to me. We were at a motorcycle event, so I started paying attention to that person, and sure enough, about an hour later, something happened with that individual was involved in. And see, this is the power of having more and more people learn and develop this skill, mm-hmm. because that's, you know, one set of eyes can only do so much. If you've got 25 sets of eyes that are looking out for the safety of an event, the safety of your community, the safety of your church, the safety of your school, that's how we empower the prevention of bad things from happening.
Our lines are packed. Let's begin with Josh in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Josh, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me on. So I just have a question for your guest about the idea of like absolute pacifism, even like with the concept biblically, how you would understand that if that relates, like the idea of turning the other cheek, if someone is not even willing to touch a firearm. I know we saw the movie Hacksaw Ridge, not for children, but someone who's not
we don't have to go into details, mm-hmm. but what about this absolute pacifism? That's really the context of your question here?
Yeah.
Okay.
How does that relate to scripture?
So one of the important things about our first 10 critical skill, which is being self-aware, is that's knowing what you're capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And if somebody is not capable of fighting off somebody, if somebody, you know, doesn't want to handle weapons, doesn't want to do those things, the last thing that we really want to do is tell them that they have to, because we set them up for failure. What we empower people to do in our program is to figure out what they're capable of doing. So if there's somebody like that I'm with in a situation and they are a great caregiver, or they are the ones that will huddle the kids together in the corner and use their body to shield them. You use the example from the movie Hacksaw Ridge, who that's what somebody like that would do. So what's important is for people to figure out what they're capable of doing, understand, and that's why one of the skills we talk about being understanding perspective. If that's their perspective, we have to respect that. We don't need to convince them that they have to carry a weapon, but we should be empowering them to know what they're capable of doing in a situation so that they can contribute to the safety of everybody that's there.
Thank you, Josh, for the call. Lines are packed. We're going to Greg next in Minnesota. Greg, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for all this great information. I have a permit to carry, and I usually carry, and I pray that I never have to use it. And you see so many people, especially young people, like you said earlier, I mean, have their heads in their phone. They're just not aware of their surroundings. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even when I go to, say, you know, get groceries, I'm always aware, you know. Always, it's like keep your head on a swivel. I guess that's the main thing. And I think that's so important. But thank you for the program.
Great. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Mason next. Hi, Mason. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say there are some things that people can do and they don't really need training. I was worked in a place for sexually violent predators where and we were taught, and we taught our families, you make eye contact. People that you make eye contact with, they don't want to monkey with you. When you walk to your car, you carry your keys and use the key out as a punch. If somebody grabs you from behind, you don't need any training to rub the side of your foot up against their shin and slam it into the top of that bridge of the foot. You tell your children, you know, if they're going, somebody takes them, they yell and scream, no, you yell, this ain't my daddy, this ain't my mommy, help me. There isn't an adult that isn't going to stop them. You women and men play fight, and, you know, my wife used to grab my finger and bend it. Well, that was one of the things in the training. You bend a finger and bite it.
Thank you, Mason. And you got probably a whole list there of things, but let me ask you, with his main point here, Colonel, he mentioned that eye contact. Speak to that issue, if you would.
Right. So that goes back to what I talked about earlier, where the person that acts prepared, that is paying attention, is ready to yell, is ready to look somebody in the eye. That's the person that, again, those predators, they want the easy victim. So if you are acting and portraying, you've got your phone out, you're maybe talking to somebody. If you have a weapon, he talked about having, you know, your keys, which is, there's a whole host of things that he, that he taught that we include in our program. But just telling a 14-year-old when you walk to the car to do X, Y, or Z, if it's not reinforced, if it's not something that turns into habits and behaviors, they may do it for three or four times, but then they get into that, they totally forget about it. 6 months later, they're not doing any of that, even though they were told, because those habits and behaviors weren't established, and they look like that easy victim, that easy target. So that's why it's so important to not just rely on traditional training, but to have a program that establishes those habits and behaviors.
Thank you, Mason. Maxine is next. You're on the air.
Yes, I was going to ask, as concealed carry, when should we wait, like, to the very last second before we would review or reveal our arms?
So, Maxine, that's one of the things that we talk about in our program is that it's very difficult for me to answer a question like that because I have no idea what the situation is going to be. Mm-hmm. I do everything that I can to make sure that I position myself to prevent something bad from happening, and thankfully, God, you know, has been there, and I have never had to actually draw my weapon. I've gotten close a couple times, but I've also de-escalated situations and put myself in situations to keep other people safe, knowing that if it got out of hand, I had the ability to do something about it. So that's why it's so important, especially if you carry a firearm, to have that process so you're thinking through over and over again, what would I do in this situation? What would I do in this situation? So that you've got that lizard brain, you've got that thought process of what you might do, so you're able to draw on that when you're then actually in that situation after you've analyzed that situation. And unfortunately, like I said, there's no easy answer to that. It's all based on how much training you have, what the situation is, what the threat is, how far away you are. There's a whole host of things that go into that decision-making process.
Thank you, Maxine, for your call. We are up against a break. Our guest here today is retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Brian Searcy, and the website is paratus.group, paratus.group. And we'll take more of your calls following the break. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. Back in 1 minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. March 7th, 2023, the Pentagon, working in conjunction with an astronomy department at Harvard University, has released a paper. Please understand, this is the Pentagon that has released this paper. And what are they talking about? The fact that a mothership hovering between the Earth and the Sun is likely sending probes to check out Earth, UFOs. They call them unidentified aerial phenomenon. Folks, did you ever think you'd see the day when the Pentagon, working with Harvard, would release such a paper saying these may be extraterrestrials? Well, I believe, as I've said for so many years, the stage is being set for a great global spiritual deception. They're looking for a technocratic savior, a technology savior, and they may be shocked at what manifests. I think it's of demons and demonology.
Situational awareness. That's our main topic here today with retired Colonel, U.S. Air Force Colonel Brian Searcy, and taking your calls here today on Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. We will give out the web address here again before we close, so be sure you write it down as I have handy a sheet of paper, a pen, or a pencil. Let's continue in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Ann, you're on the air.
Yes, Colonel, with this, as Christians, we know this period of lawlessness, godlessness is arrived. Mm-hmm. Have you had to improve your program for the limbic part of the brain, that lizard part of the brain, where we're dealing with new creatures almost in the human form, where nobody has a respect for life?
Hmm. No, that's absolutely true. And one of the key places we take our program is directly to parents, so that parents can learn and develop this skill. They can look for those learning opportunities with their kids and make sure that their kids learn and develop this critical skill and that they're aware of the threats that are out there. Our vision is to go back to how it was 30, 40 years ago, where instead of only 1 out of 7 or 1 out of 8 people actually have situational awareness, where we have kids that are going through our schools that now are 6 or 7 out of 8 or 9 have situational awareness. They practice these 10 critical skills. That's what will make them more receptive to our Savior, to the mission, to the message of Jesus Christ, but also to what our country is founded on. And then because they have learned how to practice situational awareness, because they care about others, they're much more likely then to care about what happens to other people. And like I said, that's going back to how it was 30 or 40 years ago, where parents knew this skill and made sure that their kids learned it. Unfortunately, parents today are not sharing this skill with their kids because they never learned it. That's what we need to change.
And thanks for the call from Santa Fe. Next to Westby, Wisconsin. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Brenda. I was jogging in a park just outside of Milwaukee, and I got halfway in the park and I saw a person, a man, standing near a creek, and he jumped the creek and started chasing me. And I ran as hard as I could to get out of the park. I kept looking back, and he was still coming. And I didn't go to my home that was nearby. I went around a couple blocks out of my way so that he couldn't see where I went, where my home was. And I got in my car, and I went to the police station, and I explained to them that this person was chasing me in the park. And I guess they didn't take it too serious. They didn't take down any information. But anyway, I knew something told me it was something really bad going to happen. And sure enough, he jumped that creek and he started chasing me.
Thank you for the call. We're so sorry that that situation unfolded there, but I thank God for your safety. And again, Brian, this is what you talked about, is just having that, you know, that gut feeling that all of a sudden, and she was prepared for it and did a reverse course.
Yeah, she trusted it and she actually then acted on it. As a matter of fact, the article that I just wrote today was about women that run outdoors, and that 92% of them, when they run today, are fearful that something like that is going to happen. And so it's important to vary your route. It's important to make sure on your route that it's not sparsely populated, to know that if something bad happens in a certain situation, you can run to a gas station or a coffee shop or where other people are, so that you have other people that can help protect you and put you in a situation where that predator now, you're no longer an easy victim. And I was saddened to hear that the police didn't take it seriously, but she did exactly the right thing.
Thank you, Linda. Donna in Bellevue, Ohio, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi. This is Donna.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, myself and my husband, we're an elderly couple, and when we go places, he has to use a walker. My attention is most always on him, trying to maneuver cars, traffic, that kind of thing, and then groceries and or helping him in and out, you know, of the car. Can you give some suggestions for couples like myself on how we might handle ourselves in a situation or be more alert and still do what we got to do?
Good question. Thank you, Donna.
Yeah, so there's two parts to that that I want to address very quickly. So when you learn and practice your process, so everywhere that you go and when it becomes that habit and that behavior and you spend that 25 or 30 seconds paying attention to what's going on around you, that's where you're going to make the difference. You're still going to have to do the things that you need to do, but you need to take that 25 or 30 seconds to learn what normal is. And then even though you're doing the other things that you need to do, when something isn't normal, when it enters your environment, that's when you'll get that hair on the back of the neck or that gut feeling, and you'll know then to figure out what is causing that. And then the other piece I want to talk about is and why I do what I do with my program, is that when I'm out and about, you are the type of person that I'm paying attention to. I'm making sure that there is nobody looking to make you a victim. And when there are hundreds of people like me that are looking to, you know, keep myself safe, my family safe, but also everybody in our community safe, that's how we're going to protect everybody and how we're going to make our communities more safe.
Thank you, Donna. Great question. I'm going to squeeze one last call in. Connie in Arizona, you're on the air.
Yes, I was just wondering if we're trying to get people to realize a lot more, because I'm a veteran just like the colonel, and I'm wondering if we're doing that because war's getting ready, you know, we're getting ready to go to war with the United States. They're getting ready to go with us.
I'm sorry, so what is your question today?
Okay, are we trying to get the people where they actually can help fight if a war was to break out here?
Okay, you're not really talking about military preparedness at this point, but really being current to situational awareness of what's happening in that immediate surrounding here, correct? Colonel?
Well, it's both. If there are people like myself, like her, like others that are potentially prepared to defend our country, I would do that, you know, no matter what. Now, I'm not fearful that something like that is going to happen. But one of the things we do see in our society today is that people have those blinders on. They're not paying attention. The number of people that actually know that China is the number one threat that we're facing today, they see that there are so many other threats that are right in their backyard, or they're worried about what they're going to have for dinner. They're not aware of some of these bigger things that are out there. And that goes into that, you know, second part of being self-aware, knowing what you're capable of doing and how you can help your community. I often talk about the Jewish with their kibbutz, where they have groups of families that everybody knows what they would do if something bad happens, and they are prepared to work together to keep everybody safe, to keep everybody fed, the things that need to be done. And when we as communities learn and develop this skill, figure out what we're good at, and we want to help our neighbors, that's how we make a difference.
Thank
and
you.
That's how we're going to portray to the world.
We're out of time.
Nobody should mess with us.
Out of time here. And Brian, thank you for being with us. And again, your website?
www.paratus.group.
And friends, thanks so much for joining us here today on Crosstalk. Tell a friend about this as well. You can listen on most stations rebroadcast this evening.
You're listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.